The peaceful summer holiday that Poirot and I were enjoying at St. Lou on the Cornish coast had been interrupted by an attack on the life of Nick Buckley, the owner of End House, which stood on the headland close to our hotel. Poirot had taken every possible precaution to protect the girl's life and had even insisted that she brought down a trusted friend to stay with her. Nick invited her cousin Maggie, but all Poirot's precaution had proved in vain, for on the lawn outside the house, a girl lay dead.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Simon Williams as Captain Hastings in Agatha Christie's Peril at End House.
In spite of everything that has happened, I should have foreseen. Not for an instant should I have left her side.
You mustn't blame yourself, Poirot. If somebody was so determined to kill Miss Buckley...
I'm sorry I've been so long, Maggie. I couldn't find my...
Oh.
What is it? What's happened? Maggie. Oh, Maggie.
Yes, Maggie. I thought that it was you, mademoiselle.
Is she dead?
Yes, mademoiselle. She is dead.
But why? Who could have wanted to kill Maggie?
It was not her they meant to kill, mademoiselle. It was you. They were misled by the shoal.
Oh, my God. Why couldn't it have been me? I don't want to live. Now. I'd be glad. Happy to die.
Take Mademoiselle Nick into the house, Hastings, and then telephone the police. Tell them someone has been shot. And then get back to Mademoiselle immediately. She must on no account be left on her own.
I helped the half-fainting girl through the French windows of the drawing room and laid her on the sofa. I was trying to locate the telephone out in the hall when Ellen, the housekeeper, suddenly appeared.
What is it, sir? Has something happened?
Yes. Where can I find the telephone?
There's nothing wrong, is there, sir?
There's been an accident. Somebody's been hurt. I must ring the police.
Who's been hurt, sir?
Miss Buckley. Miss Maggie Buckley.
Miss Maggie? Are you sure, sir? Are you sure it's Miss Maggie?
Of course I'm sure. Why?
Oh, nothing, sir. I thought it might be one of the other ladies. I thought it might be Mrs. Rice.
Look, please, tell me where I can find the telephone.
It's just through there, sir, in the little room under the stairs.
Thank you.
If you'd like me to...
No, that's all. Oh, can you tell me where I can find some brandy?
It's on the little table by the dining room window, sir. But wouldn't it be better?
I'll see to it. Now, leave me. Please.
Yes, sir. Of course, sir.
I made my report to the police and rang up the doctor, and then took Nick a glass of brandy. She was trying to sit up.
It's so awful. It's all so awful. Everything.
I know, my dear, I know.
No, you can't know. It's all such a waste. If only it had been me.
You mustn't say
that. No, you don't know. Poor Maggie. Poor dear old Maggie, who never harmed a soul in her life. We shared all our secrets together. That this should happen to her. I feel as though I'd killed her.
Poirot remained out in the garden, conferring with the doctor and the police for what seemed like hours. Eventually he came in with the inspector, who was clearly no stranger to Nick.
Not impeding traffic this time, Inspector.
This is a terrible business, Miss Buckley. Mr. Poirot tells me that you were shot at in the grounds of the Majestic Hotel the other morning.
That's what he told me. I thought it was a wasp, but apparently it wasn't.
And I gather there were some peculiar accidents before that. I'd just like to know how it came about that your cousin happened to be wearing your shawl tonight.
We came into the house to fetch our coats. It was rather cold watching the fireworks in the garden. I threw the shawl onto the sofa here, and Maggie and I went upstairs. I got the coat I'm wearing now and found a wrap for Freddy.
Freddy?
My friend, Mrs. Rice. Then Maggie called out that she couldn't find her coat. She went downstairs to look for it, but she still couldn't find it. I called down to tell her that I'd bring her something of my own. But she said it didn't matter. She'd take my shawl. She must have gone out then.
No, you mustn't distress yourself, Miss Buckley. Just tell me this. Did you hear the shot? Or shots?
No. All I could hear was the fireworks.
That's just it. You'd never notice a shot with all that going on.
Probably the work of some homicidal maniac. Well, I won't need to ask you any more questions tonight, Miss Buckley.
Thank you, Inspector.
Good night, miss. I'm more sorry about this than I can say.
I have been talking to your doctor, and with your approval, of course, mademoiselle, we think it would be best if you were to spend a few days in a private nursing home.
Because of the shock?
I want you to feel safe, mon enfant, and I want to feel that you are safe. You understand?
Yes, I understand, but I don't think that you do.
Hmm?
I'm not afraid anymore. I don't care one way or another. If anyone wants to murder me, they can.
What's happened? There's a policeman at the gate. He said there'd been a murder, is it, Nick?
It's all right, George. Don't be an idiot. I'm quite safe.
God, but somebody's dead. The policeman said so.
Yes, Maggie. Poor old Maggie.
Now come, Miss Buckley. I will take you to the doctor's car. We will ask the housekeeper to pack a few things for you.
Come. That's very considerate of you, Mr. Poirot. I don't want to stay here any longer.
What's the matter? Where's he taking her?
To a nursing home. It's all been the most terrible shock for her.
What a simply ghastly tragedy. Poor Maggie.
Come and have a drink, Commander. You're all to pieces.
I don't mind if I do. You see, I thought it was Nick who'd been killed.
I doubt if I shall ever forget the night that followed. Poirot was a prey to such an agony of self-reproach that I was quite alarmed.
Ah, what it is to have too good an opinion of oneself. I am punished. I was too sure of myself.
No, no.
I had put a cordon round mademoiselle, and the killer slipped through it under our very eyes. And now the position is changed for the worse. It may mean that not one life, but two will be sacrificed.
You really think, then, that Nick Butler's life is still in danger?
Oh, my friend, for what other reason did I send her to the nursing home? I take the doctor into my confidence. He will make the arrangements. No one, not even her dearest friend, will be admitted to see Miss Buckley. You and I are the only ones permitted.
You don't think that the inspector may have had a point, that it was the work of a madman?
No. I am more than ever convinced that the murderer is someone in mademoiselle's own circle.
But surely tonight has ruled out that possibility. We were all together watching the fireworks.
Now, could you swear, Hastings, that no one left our little company there on the edge of the cliff? Is there any one person whom you could swear you had seen all the time?
No, I don't think I could. On different occasions, I noticed Frederica Rice, Lazarus, Croft, and Vise. But all the time, no.
Exactly. And yet, where is the motive? Who can conceivably have had a reason for wanting to do away with Nick Buckley? Ah, but always we come back to the same problem. What is there to inherit? That telegram I sent the other day.
Oh, yes. You were very mysterious about that.
It was to an art expert in London. I wanted him to come down and inspect the portrait of Miss Buckley's grandfather, for which Monsieur Lazarus had offered her £50. Now, supposing, for instance, that it were worth several thousand. Oh, it is far-fetched, but we must neglect nothing that may bring us nearer the truth.
And what did he say?
He will come down tomorrow to examine it. Oh, but now I need to employ the little grey cells. I advise you, Hastings, to go to bed.
Nope. Not unless you do.
Oh, most faithful of dogs. But you cannot assist me to think. At least, I beg you, take the easy chair. You might find yourself taking, forty blinks.
It was daylight when I awoke. Poirot was sitting where he had been the night before. His attitude was the same, but his eyes were shining with that queer, cat-like light that I knew so well.
Tell me, Hastings, the answer to these three questions. Why has Mademoiselle Nick been sleeping badly of late? Why did she buy a black evening dress? Why did she say last night, I have nothing to live for now?
Well, as to the first, she said she'd been worried lately.
Exactly. What has she been worried about?
And as for the black dress, well, every woman wants a change sometimes.
Oh, for a married man, you have very little appreciation of feminine psychology. If a woman does not think she looks good in a colour, she refuses to wear it.
And the last, about having nothing to live for, it was a natural thing to say after that dreadful shock.
No, Hastings, it was not a natural thing to say. We have there a sudden psychological change. Now, what was it that caused that change?
I've no idea.
Think, Hastings. Think. Use the little grey cells. She was not like that before dinner. What happened towards the end of the meal?
She went out to take a telephone call.
You have got there at last. She went to answer the telephone, and she was absent for a long time. 20 minutes at least. Who spoke to her? Or was there really a telephone call at all? In those 20 minutes, I am convinced we shall find the keystone of the mystery. I know I am right.
I had a bath and a shave and went down to breakfast. There was nothing about the evening's events in the morning papers, only confirmation that Captain Seaton's plane had crashed in the Pacific and there was no longer any hope of survival. I was still looking through the papers when Mrs. Rice came in and asked if I could take her up to see Poirot.
Madame Rice, enchanté, please sit down.
Thank you.
You too, Hastings.
Thanks.
Monsieur Poirot, I suppose there's no doubt that this business last night was all part and parcel of the same thing, that the intended victim was Nick.
I should say there was no doubt at all.
Nick bears a charmed life.
Luck, they say, goes in circles.
I owe you an apology, Monsieur Poirot. Until last night, I really didn't believe that Nick was in any real danger.
Is that so, madame?
I can see that everything now will have to be gone into very carefully. And I imagine that Nick's immediate circle of friends will not be free from suspicion. Ridiculous, of course, but there it is. Am I right?
You are very intelligent, madame.
You asked me some questions about Tavistock the other day. As you will find out sooner or later, I might as well tell you the truth. I did not stay at Tavistock.
No, madame?
I motored down to this part of the world early last week with Mr. Lazarus. We didn't wish to arouse more comment than necessary. We stayed at a little place called Shelicombe.
Oh, yes, about 7 miles from here.
May I be impertinent, madame?
Is there such a thing nowadays?
Perhaps you are right. How long have you and Mr. Lazarus been friends?
I met him 6 months ago.
And you care for him, madame?
He's rich.
Oh, Lana, that is an ugly thing to say.
Isn't it better for me to say than to have you say it for me?
Oh, well, there is always that, of course. May I repeat, madame, you are very intelligent.
You'll be giving me a diploma soon.
There is nothing more you wish to tell me, madame?
I don't think so. I'm going to take some flowers round to Nick and see how she is.
That is most amiable of you, madame, and thank you for your frankness.
Au revoir, Monsieur Poirot.
Goodbye, Madame Rice. She is intelligent, bien sûr, but not so intelligent as Hercule Poirot.
What do you mean?
That it is all very well to push the richness of Monsieur Lazarus down my throat.
Yeah, I must say, that rather disgusted me.
No, mon cher, you always have the right reaction in the wrong place. It is not a question of good taste. If Madame Rice has a lover who is rich and gives her everything she wants, then obviously she would not need to murder her devoted friend.
Oh.
Précisément.
Why didn't you stop her going to the nursing home? They'll never let her in.
Oh, why should I show my hand? Is it Hercule Poirot who prevents Madame from seeing her friends? It is those tiresome doctors and nurses.
Look here, Monsieur Poirot, what's going on? I rang up that damned nursing home where Nick is and asked what time I could go round and see her, and they say the doctor won't allow any visitors. I don't believe that Nick really isn't up to seeing anyone. I think you're at the bottom of this, Monsieur Poirot.
Now, listen to me, mon ami. If one guest is admitted, others cannot be kept out. Others whose motives might not be as above suspicion as those of the good Commander Challenger. You comprehend? It must be all or none. And since we all wish for the safety of Mademoiselle, it must be none.
Point taken. No embargo on flowers, though, is there? Thank you, Monsieur Poirot. I'll send some straight away.
And now, while the impetuous commander and Mrs. Rice and perhaps the rich Mr. Lazarus all encounter each other in the flower shop, you and I will drive quietly to our destination.
And find the answer to your three questions.
Oh, if you wish, but as a matter of fact, I already know the answer.
Huh? When did you find out?
While I was eating my breakfast, Hastings. It stared me in the face.
Tell me.
No. I will leave you to hear it from Mademoiselle.
It's good of you to come.
You must be brave, Mademoiselle. There is always something to live for.
I wish I could believe that.
May I offer you my deepest sympathy?
So you know. There's no point in trying to hide it any longer. Now that I shall no longer see him again.
Courage, Mademoiselle.
I haven't any courage left. I've used up every bit over these last weeks.
Regard the poor Hastings. He has no idea what we are talking about.
Michael Seaton, the man who was trying to fly around the world. I was engaged to him.
Oh, I'm very sorry, Miss Buckley. He died like a hero.
You heard the news last night?
Yes, it was on the wireless. That telephone call was just an excuse. I wanted to hear the news alone.
And how long had you been engaged to him?
Since just after Christmas. But it had to be kept secret.
Why was that?
Because of Michael's uncle, old Sir Matthew Seaton. He was a complete crank. Thought women ruined a man's life. Or somebody had jilted him, I think. He was frightfully fond of Michael. Or he put up the money for the Albatross and the round-the-world flight. If Michael had pulled it off, well, he could have asked his uncle anything. He'd have been world famous. His uncle would have come round.
So you told no one? Not even Madame Rice? Oh,
sometimes I wanted to, frightfully. Especially when his plane was reported missing. It was awful not being able to talk to anyone.
You do not think that she may have guessed?
I don't think so. Of course, she used to hint at things sometimes, about Michael and I being great friends and all that.
But am I not right in supposing that Michael Seaton's uncle died a week or so ago? I seem to remember reading about it.
Yes, that's right.
And did you not consider telling Mrs. Rice even then?
I suppose I might have told anybody. But Michael's round-the-world flight was on the front page of every newspaper. It would have seemed rather boastful to break the news that I was engaged to him. And Michael would have hated the publicity.
Yes, I agree. You could not have announced it to the world at large. I only meant that you could have mentioned it privately to a friend.
I did sort of hint it to one person. I thought it was only fair. But I don't know how much he took in.
You told this person because he was in love with you?
Perhaps.
You once mentioned that you had made a will. Where is it, Mademoiselle?
Oh, it's knocking around.
At Inn House?
Yes, but I can't say exactly where. Oh, I'm frightfully untidy. It's probably in the writing table in the library, or it might be in my bedroom.
You permit me to make a search?
If you want to. Look anywhere you like.
You see, Hastings, I was right. Always I knew there was something lacking, some piece of the puzzle that was not there.
Do you mean that this Michael Seaton business has some bearing on the case?
Oh, ma foi, do you not see? It gives us what we have been looking for, the motive.
I may be very dense, but I can't see it.
Now, just over a week ago, Sir Matthew Seaton dies. He was a millionaire, one of the richest men in England.
Yes, but...
One step at a time. He has a nephew whom he idolizes and to whom we may safely assume he has left his vast fortune. Last Tuesday, Michael Seaton was reported missing, and the following day the attacks began on Mademoiselle Nick's life.
But I still don't...
Supposing, Hastings, that Michael Seaton made a will before he started on his flight and left everything to his fiancée.
That's pure speculation.
Perhaps, but it must be so, because... If it is not, there is no meaning in anything that has happened. For it is no dilapidated house that is at stake, but an enormous fortune.
But if nobody knew of the engagement...
Somebody did know. Somebody always knows. If they do not know, they guess. Madame Rice suspected. Mademoiselle Nick admitted so much. And she may have had a way of turning her suspicion into a certainty.
How could she do that?
Well, for one thing, there must have been letters from Michael Seaton to Mademoiselle Nick. And it is all too evident that she leaves things here, there, and everywhere.
And Frederica Rice probably knew about the terms of her friend's will.
Doubtless. So this narrows down our list of suspects. I dismiss Commander Challenger. I dismiss Mr. Lazarus. I dismiss the excessively Australian Mr. and Mrs. Croft. So, only two people remain.
One is obviously Frederica Rice.
Yes. She is indicated very clearly. Apart from End House itself, which was left to Nick's cousin, Mr. Weiss, everything was to go to her. If Mademoiselle Nick had been shot instead of Maggie, Mrs. Rice would be a very rich woman.
I can hardly believe it.
You mean that you can hardly believe that a beautiful woman can be a murderess? Then what about our other suspect, Charles Weiss?
But he only stands to inherit the house.
Yes, my friend, but he may not know that. Did he make Mademoiselle's will for her? No, I think not. He may well believe that his scatterbrained cousin never made a will at all, and that he will inherit as next of kin.
You know, that really seems much more probable.
Yes, that is your romantic mind, Hastings. That well-known figure of fiction, the wicked solicitor. But it is true that Mr. Weiss would be more likely to know about the pistol and more likely to use it.
And to send that boulder crashing down.
Perhaps.
It really is amazing the way Nick has escaped.
Yes, and I can take no credit to myself.
Providence?
Mon ami, you say that in your Sunday morning voice of gratitude, without reflecting that what you are really saying is that Le Bon Dieu has killed Maggie Buckley.
Really, Poirot?
But I will not sit back and say Le Bon Dieu has arranged everything. I will not interfere, because I am convinced that Le Bon Dieu created Hercule Poirot for the express purpose of interfering. It is my métier.
The French windows of End House were, as usual, wide open. Poirot rang the bell to summon Ellen, who showed not the least surprise on seeing us.
Search where you like. The police have been all over the garden since early this morning. I don't know whether they found anything.
Were you very surprised last night when you heard that Miss Buckley had been shot?
Yes, sir. Very surprised. I can't imagine anyone being so wicked as to want to arm Miss Maggie.
If it had been anyone else, you would not have been so surprised,
I don't know what you mean, sir.
When I came into the hall last night, you asked if anyone had been hurt. Were you expecting something of the kind?
You wouldn't understand, sir. You see, this is in a good house.
But you mean that sometimes in an old house there is an atmosphere of evil?
That's it, sir. Bad thoughts and bad deeds to it. It's like dry rot. You can't get rid of it. I always knew something bad would happen here one day.
In an old house, there are sometimes secret hiding places. Do you know of any here?
Well, sir, there is a kind of sliding panel thing in this very room.
Huh?
I remember being shown it as a girl. Only, no, I can't recall where it is.
Big enough for a person to hide in?
Oh, no, sir, no, it's just a little cupboard place, about a foot square. No more than that.
Ah. Well, thank you, Ellen. We shall not need to detain you any longer. We will begin our search in the library.
What was all that about?
The secret chamber. I thought it might have appealed to you, Hastings. And I wish to rid myself of the possibility of the unknown intruder. Factor X, let us call it. But it is of no consequence. Let us see if the will is among the papers in Mademoiselle's desk.
It took us some time to go through them. Everything was in complete confusion. Bills, receipts, invitations, all jumbled up together.
But no sign of a will. The only item of interest is perhaps this letter.
Darling, party was too marvellous. Feel rather a worm today. You were wise not to touch that stuff. It's too hard to give up. I'm writing to the boyfriend to hurry up the supply. What hell life is. Yours, Freddy. This must be from Mrs. Rice.
Dated last February. She takes drugs, of course. I knew that as soon as I looked at her.
Really?
You can see it in her eyes. And then there are her extraordinary variations of mood.
Well, that must have been what Nick meant when she said Mrs. Rice was not always herself.
Undoubtedly. Ah, well, we have drawn a blank here. Let us try Mademoiselle's room.
You surely, Poirot, those are underclothes. I mean, we can hardly...
Decidedly, my poor Hastings, you belong to the Victorian era. Young ladies are not ashamed of their underclothes nowadays.
I don't see any need to search through those things.
Écoutez, mon ami. Clearly she does not lock up her treasures. If she were to hide anything from sight, it would be underneath the stockings and the petticoats. Here are, and here, if I do not mistake, are the love letters of Michael Seaton.
Poirot, you really can't do that. It isn't playing the game.
I am not playing a game, my friend. I am hunting down a murderer. Now come, you might as well read them with me. Console yourself with the thought that the faithful Ellen probably knows them by heart.
New Year's Day. Darling, the new year is in and I'm making good resolutions. It seems too wonderful that you should actually...
February 8th. Dearest love, how I wish I could see you more often, but honestly it might upset the whole apple cart. Uncle Matthew has got such a bee in his bonnet about...
April 18th. Darling, the whole thing is fixed up. If I pull this off, I shall be able to take a firm line with Uncle Matthew, and if he doesn't like it, what do
Dearest,
I care?
Dearest, I'm off tomorrow. Somebody said I ought to make a will, so I have, on a half sheet of paper, and sent it to old Whitfield. I remembered that your name was really Magdala, which was clever of me. So that's it. I've simply written, I leave everything to Magdala. So, Hastings, it is as I told you. We now know that the fact that Michael Seaton made a will in favor of Mademoiselle Nick is actually recorded in writing. And with the letters so casually hidden, anyone could read them.
Ellen?
Almost certainly. Or Frederica Rice. Or even Mr. Weiss.
Or Ellen could be in league with one of them. Lazarus, perhaps.
Aye, she's possible, my friend. With the fortune of one of the richest men in England at stake, who might not find the temptation impossible to resist? But which of them fired the shots that killed that poor girl, Hastings? Which of them?
In part three of Agatha Christie's Peril at End House, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat, and Captain Hastings by Simon Williams. Nick Buckley, Gemma Saunders. Frederica Rice, Susanna Hamilton. George Challenger, Andrew Wincott. Ellen, Hilda Schroeder. The Police Inspector, David Thorpe. Peril at End House is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.